I longed to make things. Ships, houses, engines. Many sheets of cardboard and pairs of scissors I spoiled, only to turn from my hopeless failures in tears. I was driven to write stories instead, little dreaming to what a world of happiness I was being admitted. You can do more with a castle and a story than with the best cardboard castle that ever stood on a nursery table. This is Pints with Jack, Season 7, Episode 30. Narnia Month, The Inkwell Chronicles. After Hours with J.D. Peabody. Welcome everyone. Here on Pints with Jack, we're reading our way through the works of C.S. Lewis, and we are currently in Narnia Month. And today we're actually not going to be, at least not directly referencing a Narnian chronicle, but something that is very much within the spirit of Narnia. Today I'm talking with J.D. Peabody about his book, The Inkwell Chronicles. And we're going to discover the importance and power of ink in this discussion, which is why today's opening quotation was from Surprised by Joy, where Jack describes his own discovery of the power of ink, how superior it can be to using cardboard and glue to build something. Nah, ink is much more powerful. And Jeff Peabody is the founding pastor of New Day Church in Federal Way, Washington. He is a husband and father of three grown children. He is the author of Perfectly Suited, The Armor of God for the Anxious Mind, but also of a middle grade fantasy series featuring the Inklings, which we'll be discussing today, The Inkwell Chronicles. Jeff, welcome to Pints with Jack.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, this has been a long time coming. As I said when you first came on the video today, thank you very much for sending me the book, for being patient with me, and for talking with me today, because you sent me a copy of your book, and when I got to it, I really enjoyed it. But funnily enough, my wife actually got to it first, because it had been sitting on the side of my office desk for a while, and she started asking questions about the giant pigeon that was on the front. And I told her, just go read it and tell me what you think of it. And she loved it, and she told me that I absolutely had to make sure that I interviewed you this season.
Oh, that's great. Tell her thank you.
Yes, and also my nephew, he's read it now and he really enjoyed it as well.
Oh, excellent.
Well, today I'm enjoying, actually it's a new beer from Best Day Brewing. This is their white Belgian style wheat beer and it is absolutely delicious. I actually had one yesterday. Do you have anything to drink?
I do. It's middle of the day here, so I thought in the spirit of Jack, I would drink Irish breakfast tea.
Excellent choice.
This is a loose leaf tea that some friends of mine brought me back from Ireland because I thought, it's better closer to the source, just like Guinness, right?
Mm-hmm. So absolutely, yes.
And I'm drinking it from my Inklings mug that has all the signatures of all the Inklings on the back of it. So it's not a pint really, but you know, Lewis did say that he could never have a cup of tea big enough or a book long enough. So it's a pretty good size mug.
I love it. Cheers.
Cheers.
So to kick things off, would you mind just filling out your background for us?
Yeah. So I spent the first half of my career in advertising as a creative director and copywriter. And so most of my career I've been writing in some form or fashion. And then I made a pretty big jump into pastoring and church planting about 22, 23 years ago. So then I've been doing different kinds of writing, but all along too, I've dabbled in more creative writing adventures, from songwriting to poetry to screenplays to I really honestly didn't think I could write an entire book when I was used to, for my advertising world, writing 30-second segments or you know, very short form writing. I just didn't think I had the brain power for the arc it would take to actually write a novel. And so this was a really fun experiment for me to, and I'd never written children's literature either. So that I was very naive stepping into that world, and I guess we'll get into this in a bit, but really was largely inspired by Narnia and my own story to actually attempt it. So yeah, that's a little bit of my background just as a writer.
But this wasn't the first book you'd written. I mentioned in the biographical information that you wrote Perfectly Suited.
Right.
Mind just telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So actually, I wrote Perfectly Suited. I was kind of writing both books at the same time. Both took me about 5 to 6 years in the process. So it's hard to know exactly where they both overlap. But the Perfectly Suited book is a nonfiction book that is looking at the armor of God through the lens of my own personal struggle with OCD and anxiety. And I really hit an emotional and mental wall about 10 years ago now. And it was really a dark time for me. And writing really became an important part of my therapy. And so I tell people that the nonfiction book is really a description of what I was going through, and the Inkwell Chronicles really became my way for my brain to actually heal and move forward. And so to me, they feel linked, even though if you put them side by side, you would never think they actually had anything to do with each other, but that. They kind of, when I was writing them, they actually, I got my publishing contracts within a week of each other of the two books. And then they went to publication a month apart when they actually came out. So, which was very odd after they had both gone through such a long process of development. I never expected that.
Well, it's very appropriate given that Lewis spoke about the mind being the organ of truth and the imagination being the organ of meaning. It makes sense that therapy involved both of those things, both the mind and the imagination.
Yeah.
Well, what has actually been your own experience with Lewis and the Inklings in general?
Yeah, my first memory really goes back to about fourth grade when my parents got me a copy of Prince Caspian.
Oh no!
I had not read Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but I dove into that book. I didn't even know it was a series when I started reading it, and that really was a pretty transformational book for me in terms of my experience of reading. Actually, feeling like I was transported to another world and lost myself and kind of come up for air and look around and feel disoriented, wonder where I am kind of thing. And for me, that really was an introduction to reading on a new level of just really being fully immersed in a different world. And so I spent a lot of time with all the Chronicles multiple times all through my growing up years and into adulthood. And then I think probably when I was in college, I became more acquainted with Lewis's theological works, Screwtape Letters and A Grief Observed and Mere Christianity. And then on into my writing phase, really going back and even revisiting some of his writing about writing for children. And I just did an interview article with a number of authors talking about the process of writing for kids. And I went back and revisited his essay on writing for children in light of the modern sensibilities around doing the same thing. And really so much of it is just, it's really good because, I don't even know that at the time he was writing, if the criticism of children's literature was really a discipline all that much at the time. And now you can get into the analysis and quickly get in the weeds. And so it was really good to just go back to, he had sort of a simple clarity about how he approached it that was helpful for me. So yeah, I'd say each stage of my life has had different components of his writing that have really been applicable to me. And as a pastor, I'm quoting him all the time. So that's always a surefire hit if you have a quote from Lewis in a sermon.
Yeah, the number of times I've had guests, if they didn't start with the Chronicles of Narnia, it's usually that they were under a pastor who really loved Lewis and quoted him in pretty much every single sermon.
Yeah.
And so that usually eventually sent them going looking for the source.
Yeah.
What about the Inklings, though, more broadly, like Tolkien and also their circle, like Dorothy L. Sayers, for instance?
Right. Yeah. So I hadn't read a lot of Sayers prior to incorporating her as a character in the book. She becomes Aunt Dot in the Inkwell Chronicles. And I just, I think I'm fascinated by her absolute authority in her writing is so, it's just so compelling, I think, in the way she presents her ideas as if, why would you think otherwise, kind of. And, so I tried to incorporate a bit of that also in her personality as I'm fictionalizing her and imagining her interacting with children. But I am not super broadly read in a lot of the Inklings, but it was fun to get more acquainted with them just through the context of writing this book or series. Hmm.
Well, today we're going to be talking about the first in the series, The Ink of Elspeth. Would you mind just telling us a little bit about the journey of getting from initial idea to seeing it in stores?
Yeah.
You said it was about 5 or 6 years.
Yes. So I think it was about 2014 where I first had this little idea for a book that was generated back by the magician's nephew, where you remember the rings there, the green and gold rings that took people mm-hmm. back and forth between worlds. And at the end of the book, there are all these extra rings that they bury under the tree in the backyard. And the thought occurred to me, well, what if 50 years later, somebody moved into that apartment and dug up those rings and had their own new set of adventures going somewhere else? And so that initially was my thought. And I was kind of excited about that idea. And then I went back to The Last Battle and saw they actually did dig up the rings already and took them on the train with them. And so mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's not going to work. And so then I got thinking about that train wreck and I thought, I wonder if there was actually a real train wreck that Lewis had in mind when he was writing this. And I did a little research and found that there was, in fact, a very major train crash in 1952 in London that was the biggest peacetime rail accident in British history. And still to this day, it's a mystery why it actually happened. And so that got me thinking, okay, what if we kind of begin to create a story around what maybe was behind that accident? So it kind of has this tangential history connection to the Chronicles of Narnia in that sense. And then, so I began to flesh that idea out. And really what the plot line really is, there is this train crash and these two kids, Everett and Bee, their father is on that train and he goes missing and is presumed dead after the crash, but there's no body. And so they become convinced that he's alive. And so they set out to rescue him and in the process encounter the Inklings and also discover that there is this ink that their father was involved with that was the cause of his being abducted from this train. But this ink is behind all the great creativity in the world. And the Inklings are sort of guardians of this ink in this story. And so that's kind of the background of the plot. But then were you wanting to know kind of the, I may be getting off from what you were asking. Were you asking the journey to publishing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I finished the draft of the story in 2015 and I just was thoroughly enamored with my work. I just, it had been so much fun to write that I thought it was amazing. And I started to send it out to agents and quickly began to rack up the rejections, and I ended up with over 100 different rejections from agents. But a few of them along the way gave me some little direction, critique that I just kept editing away and editing away. And eventually I found an agent who was interested in it. And she took me to the woodshed for about a year plus of just completely gutting the thing. And it was really a good education for me and how what it even means to write children's literature. And I still was enjoying the whole process. It was really, really fun. But then she fired me. Long story, I ended up with a different agent who then did the same process, really, of taking me through another journey of editing for about a year. And that was also just really, I kept waiting for the day when I was going to feel like this is too tedious. I can't keep coming back to this, but I just, I really fell in love with the characters and the world and just had a great time every time being back in there. And then he pitched it to about 35 different publishers before one finally said, yes, we love this and would like to run with it. So, and that was in 2022, or I think maybe I signed the deal in 2021, and then it finally published in 2022. So yeah, it was about a 7-year journey, I guess, from start to finish there for that. And then book two came out last year, and then book three is slated to come out in September this year.
I actually did know most of that story. I listened to your interview on the Inklings Variety Hour podcast.
I just wanted you to
retell it here because I'm tremendously impressed. I think I would have flipped my table and walked away a long time before that. So I wanted this to be a wonderful example of perseverance to inspire the listeners.
That may be part of my OCD brain latching on to something and keep going. I have a friend who I consider to be a better writer than me who hasn't found a publisher and said it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts every rejection, and he just has shelved out the effort for a while because it's too painful. But yeah, I really I learned a lot through the perseverance. I learned a lot about being edited that was really good for me and humbling, and I'm grateful that I stuck it out for sure.
Well, let's move on. So you've already given a little bit of a synopsis of how the book works, the fact that there is this special ink, and that the fact that the Inklings had a much larger role in history than we have thus far been told. How did the writers themselves, how do they influence this book, both in terms of their portrayals and characterization, and also the books that which they wrote? Because as I was going through, there were quite a few turns of phrase I went, ooh, I know where that's from. And it was typically from a Narnian Chronicle.
Right, right. I did try to really pay homage with the style of the writing because it's actually set in 1952. I wanted to have a little bit of a historic sense to the vocabulary and the general sense of writing. So I write in sort of a third person omniscient sort of voice like you find in the Chronicles of Narnia that is not as common today in most kids' books. Most of them are first person. Mm-hmm. And so it has a little bit of that kindly uncle sort of tone, I think, to the narrator. That was definitely trying to just give a slight nod there to Lewis and his style of writing. And then I just tried to interject what felt to me like a little bit of the characters' personalities, as much as I know them from Tolkien and Lewis and Sayers, just how they might engage playfully. I think you did an episode recently that where you're talking about play and just the importance of that for Lewis, And so it was, I loved some of his interactions in the letters with children, you know, and so to kind of embody that and figure out what that might look like if they were really interacting with Everett and Bea. And
it was the interaction between Dorothy Sayers and Tolkien that I particularly liked, because I've always got the impression that I think Dorothy L. Sayers would be fun, but kind of bossy. And I don't think she would put up with too much of the wishy-washiness of Tolkien sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I was fair to Tolkien, because that's something that carries clear through the series. He's always being interrupted by, you know, he's sort of rambling on about things often, and nobody's really letting him finish a sentence most of the time. And especially Dorothy, the relationship between the two of them, it's almost a sibling sort of way they relate to each other, where they pick at each other, but really deep down there's this deep affection. So
How did you walk the line between history and fantasy? Because with historical fiction, it's always a tough decision that I imagine people have got to make between something for the story and, you know, something that actually happened in the way that it would have happened. So, for example, I have looked for any secret passages in The Eagle and Child. I can assure you that there are none, but you do have one in the book. So how did you sort of think through that process?
Well, maybe they sealed the passage in the 60s. It's not there anymore. So I had two things going on. I had historical characters to try to figure out what I could actually take liberties with, and also history itself because of some of the events and places. And one of the things that I struggled with about The Eagle and Child was, I understand, at least from pictures that I've, because I haven't been there myself, but I don't think the rabbit room actually has a door on it.
No.
And so in my, it was
today.
Very important to my story that it have a door on it. And so I really wrestled with how to do that. And then I finally figured, well, it's probably been remodeled and updated from time to time, and maybe we could have a door be on it in this particular universe back in the 50s and get away with it. And yeah, I mean, I think that is always a thing that hung me up in several points of the story, of going, how do I have this stay true to history, but also go, this is a kid's fiction book. It can, I can make it do whatever it wants, and have it be its own alternate take on history. But for the most part, I did try to weave in as much actual history as I could. So I tried to take a look at what projects Lewis and Tolkien and Sayers were writing at the time. So that kind of comes out in the later books too, where I tried to not have them be going on a long adventure or something if they were right in the middle of a writing deadline, or, you know, something that just...
I don't think that would have been a problem for Tolkien.
right.
It's like, ah, I'll get back to it. It's fine.
Yeah. Anyway, I tried to really wrap in some legitimate history and kind of weave in some Easter eggs through it. The character who, Nurse Abby, who shows up at the scene of the crash, is a real historical person who actually did this amazing triage work using only her lipstick instead of a pen. That was all very much real, and got to speak with one of her living relatives, which was really a thrill to hear stories about her. And I tried not to bend the truth too much, other than the whole premise of the book, but it did really make me feel connected to places and events that actually did happen. And so hopefully I didn't do an injustice to any of it, but
not at all.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough balance.
Some of the references were wonderfully obscure. So you have a page on your website where you basically show your hand with regards to some of the people who were referenced, who were actually real people. And I was particularly delighted to see the origins of Max Courageous, because just before we hit record, I showed you my comic book collection. And these aren't ones that I collected as an adult. These are the ones that I had as a child. And I loved MASC. That's Mobile Armored Strike Command. It was a bunch of vehicles that could turn into planes and stuff. And I had the comic book. And in England, they paired it after a little while with another comic, another magazine called The Eagle. And when I looked at your webpage, I discovered that there was a link here as well.
Yeah, which actually was fun because there was a link to the Inklings too, because the Eagle as a comic was created by Marcus Morris, who was a vicar who decided that he didn't like the level of vulgarity he was seeing in comics and wanted to create something as an alternative that was a little more wholesome for kids. And so here he is. He's this vicar who started creating this comic book, which seems like such an odd pairing of interests. And so Marcus in my story, Marcus Drake, is inspired by that and when he creates the Max Courageous comic book series. But the other piece about Marcus Morris was that he was the editor of an Anglican publication called the Anvil that C.S. Lewis would write for. So there was a natural pairing of this vicar with Lewis. So that became also then my thought of connecting Marcus Drake to Lewis and weaving that all in. So yeah, that was a fun little one to bury in there. Another one that for me was fun was even the title of book one is The Ink of Elspeth. And Elspeth in this in real life, the real Elspeth is the mother of P.T. Forsyth, who is one of my favorite theologians. It always makes me smile to think of working in the mother of my favorite theologian into a children's book randomly. But she and her husband actually also took in boarders, and George MacDonald was one of their boarders as a college student. So it all wove in together. I didn't have to work too hard to make the connections. So
well, the more I read of history of that era, it does seem that pretty much everybody important to me knew each other.
It seems like that, yeah.
So we've spoken about book one, The Ink of Elspeth, but since I started reading it, there's now two and three. Would you mind just giving us a sketch of what happens there and what kind of adventures the kids go on next?
Yes. So book two is called Race to Krakatoa. And that book takes them on the same characters. Really, it's just set a few months later than book one. They are introduced to someone has generated a synthetic ink that turns out to be very powerful, but have very nefarious qualities. So it's like a twist on creativity that's got this evil bent to it. And it's very difficult to discern from the ink. And so they're having to sort through falsehood from truth. The Inklings community is in jeopardy. And so the kids set up on this sort of globetrotting adventure that takes them to Italy and Egypt and India, and then on to Indonesia. And Krakatoa is where, if you ever read The 21 Balloons by William Penn Dubois, that was set over the island of Krakatoa. This weaves in his story there a little bit. And the Inklings, again, are part of that whole adventure as well. That book really ended on a pretty serious cliffhanger. And I didn't know at the time if the publisher was giving me a contract for book three. So I got it done and turned it in. And then I thought, oh no, I don't know if they're actually going to give me another book. And I really was struggling going, I'm going to have to write this and self-publish if they don't, because I just had to land the plane. And I can't really tell you much about book three without being a spoiler for book two, but I feel like it's a satisfying response to a continuation of the story that leaves open the possibility for more in the series, but also feels like a good conclusion to the initial three. So I have to be a little mysterious about book three, I feel like, at this point.
And once again, that's another good Inklings echo, because Lewis didn't envision seven books all at once. Mm-hmm. He did one, he did a sequel,
yeah.
He did a trilogy, and things actually were very nicely rounded off at the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, but yet there were still four Chronicles after that.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually that sort of sequential thinking, that's part of why I didn't think I could write a book, because I couldn't see a full arc. I could only see a little bit. And finally, I just was like, well, I'm just going to write as far as I know now. And I would get done with a chapter and have a thought for the next chapter. And so I really kind of built the road as I was going. And then it had lots of editing after the fact, but I really didn't know when I wrote book one that this would be a trilogy at this point. And yeah, who knows? Maybe it is seven. Feels like it's either got to be three or seven, right?
those are good numbers to follow. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I did also want to say is I really enjoyed the audiobook, because I have small children. Therefore, very often I supplement my physical reading with the audiobook when I don't get a chance to sit down quietly by myself. And I thought the quality of it was wonderful. I thought the voice actor did a great job.
I really enjoyed that narrator. Her name is Fenella Fudge. Her real given name is Fenella Fudge. And I thought, that is just made for reading children's books.
Mm-hmm.
How could you do anything else with your life if that's your name? So yeah, she was a delightful choice. I'm so glad the publisher selected her, because she's done the first two. I think she'll probably be the choice for book three as well, because she's done such a great job.
Wonderful. Well, Jeff Peabody, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's just delightful.
As the landlord rings the bell for final drinks, can you please tell us where people can go to find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, the easiest way is to just visit my website, jdpeabody.com. You can find the books pretty much anywhere books are sold, but probably my website is the easiest place.
And if people wanted to find that page with all of the answers as to what you're alluding to, what's that page?
Yes, that is just jdpeabody.com/invisible.
But I would encourage everyone, read the book first.
Right.
See what you can recognize. We've given you a few of them here, but read it first, see what you recognize, and then go and check your answers.
Exactly.
Well, thanks again to our guest, JD Peabody. Thanks to our sound engineers, Taylor and Sarah, our intern, Julia. Thanks to all of our listeners and patron supporters, particularly our top tier supporters. Mary Margaret, Aldo, James, Matt, Erica, Joelle, Amanda, Thomas, Bud 1, Bud 2, Shane, Kay, Paul, Gary, Stephen, Kelly, Chris, John, James, Kate, Peter, David, Angela, and Rowdy. We pray for you every week, and we offer up prayers for the requests in our Slack channel. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please buy two copies of the Inkwell Chronicles, one for yourself, maybe get the audiobook, and then one for a middle schooler in your life. I have a nephew who now loves me much more than he did before. And please join us again next time. We'll continue going further up
and further in.
Cheers.
Cheers.